John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, October 28, 2010. Wednesday, Israeli soldiers and undercover units kidnapped seven children ages 11 to 15 in the town of Silwan in occupied East Jerusalem. They were ambushed as they came home from school. No reason was given, and the children were taken to a local Israeli police station for questioning. One boy, 14, was ordered to appear for his attack on Israeli soldiers while he was defending his mother and brother, who were being beaten by soldiers on October 14th. Arab member of the Israeli Knesset, Hanan Zubi, was hit by two rubber-coated bullets fired by the Israeli police during clashes on Wednesday in the Arab city of Al-Fahm. Police had violently attacked protesters who came into the streets to counter a march by fundamentalist settlers. Reports say the Arab Knesset member was deliberately targeted by the police. Dozens of residents were wounded and treated for gas inhalation. Reports said police made deliberate attacks intending to hurt Arab residents. Zobi said Arabs will continue to defend themselves and their lands and demand their legitimate rights. The prime minister of the dissolved government in Gaza stated the importance of holding direct talks with Western governments and not relying on hearsay. Ismail Haniya welcomed a French team that included international human rights experts and called on delegates to help Palestinians achieve liberation and end the siege on Gaza, which he referred to as an open-air prison. On Thursday, Israeli soldiers arrested two Palestinians after throwing stun grenades and invading and searching their houses. The Israeli army also erected a blockade at the entrance north of Hebron. Other invasions, searches, and blockades were reported in the south and central Hebron regions. On Wednesday, the Anglican Archbishop canceled a performance of the opera Porgy and Bess that the Cape Town Opera Company was scheduled to perform in Israel next month. Nobel Peace Prize winner Desmond Tutu said that it would be unconscionable for performance to take place in Israel while millions of Palestinians are denied access to culture and education. The opera has a universal message of non-discrimination, which contradicts the behavior of Israel toward Palestinians. Tutu, who likened the Palestinian situation to South Africa under apartheid, said luring artists to Tel Aviv advances a false claim that Israel is a civilized democracy. The Minister of Religious Affairs and Chairman of Jerusalem Committee condemned the building of 750 housing units that had been approved by the local committee of construction and organization in the Israeli municipality in a settlement in occupied Jerusalem. Talib Abu Shar considered the approval as a new step in continuing settlement construction and Judaizing the city, and he demanded international support condemning the Israeli practices against the Palestinians and their lands. On Thursday afternoon, Israeli soldiers and the Israeli intelligence chief invaded many houses belonging to Hamas leaders in the neighborhood of Jenin and engaged him in conversation about the current political situation. On Wednesday, Dr. Hanna Issa, an expert in international law, confirmed that among all the children of the world, Palestinian children are suffering the most due to the ongoing Israeli practice against them that began in 1948, when families were displaced and became homeless. Trauma, loss of home and family, and abuses suffered over decades leave the indelible scars of their suffering. More than 3,000 children have been kidnapped by the Israeli army and face imprisonment, abuse, and bad living conditions, depriving them of basic human rights. Dr. Issa demanded that the international community exert pressure on the Israeli government to abide by the international law to protect the internationally guaranteed rights of Palestinian children. On Thursday, Knesset Speaker Reuven Rivlin met with French Senate President Gerard Larcher in Paris to discuss the peace talks. Rivlin said that in his opinion, the settlements are merely an excuse for the Palestinians to end peace negotiations. He said the Israeli people who live in the settlements are not an obstacle to peace. Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad claimed that the issue is not a mere excuse for the peace process, but the settlements are considered illegal under international law, and that Israel interprets UN resolutions as only recommendations. Today, more than 500,000 Israelis live in illegal settlements within the West Bank and East Jerusalem. More than 600 Palestinians were displaced from East Jerusalem and the West Bank after their homes were demolished to construct Israeli settlements with no alternative housing or compensation for the displaced, left homeless and destitute. On Thursday, Israeli soldiers invaded several areas of Jenin and Bethlehem, breaking into and searching several homes and causing damage. Soldiers interrogated several citizens, while tanks and armored vehicles were stationed nearby. Last Tuesday, Nigeria announced that its Secret Service managed to intercept 13 containers reportedly loaded with weapons believed to be sent from Iran to the Hamas movement in Gaza. The explosives were camouflaged as construction materials and were seized Lagos port in Nigeria. A Nigerian spokeswoman stated that after opening the first container, grenades, rocket launchers, and different sorts of explosives were located concealed among crates of floor tiles. Israel is currently holding talks with Nigeria in an attempt to acquire more information about the weapons and have an investigation started. And that is just some of our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today, a program of the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates and details of these stories, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report was brought to you by Wissam Cassis and Doris Norito.
Afghanistan today. A NATO soldier was killed by an IED somewhere in southern Afghanistan. Baghdad, Iraq today. Brigadier Abdul Razak Abdul Wahab of the Oil Facilities Protection Department was killed by a bomb planted in his car. The bomb exploded as Abdul Wahab was driving his car in Alamil neighborhood, killing him and damaging several close civilian vehicles. Baghdad, Iraq today. Another bomb exploded in the car of Brigadier Hussein Mahdi Juma in the same neighborhood. He was wounded but not killed. Baghdad, Iraq today. A third bomb exploded in the car of an employee in the Reconstruction and Housing Ministry in Al-Qurata neighborhood in central Baghdad, injuring him. Mosul, Iraq today. A suicide bombing outside of the federal police headquarters in the city of Mosul killed two police officers and left at least eight people wounded. Mr. Barack Obama, former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, is advising that victory in Afghanistan is impossible and that the U.S. should get the hell out. Take his advice and remember that it is equally valid in Iraq. Bring all the troops home today. Late night on the 25th of October or early morning on the 26th, somebody shot up the Marine Corps Recruiting Center in Chantilly, Virginia with a high-powered rifle. In earlier news, the FBI has confirmed that the same rifle was used to shoot up the Pentagon and the Marine Corps Museum. Once again, as in the other two incidents, this was property damage only with no human injuries.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
Those army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQT Radio at hushmail.com.
Over the past 2 weeks, French workers have engaged in militant national strikes and massive protests in opposition to President Nicolas Sarkozy's plan to raise the minimum retirement age from 60 to 62 and the age for a full government pension from 65 to 67 years. Although there is widespread public opposition, the French Senate and National Assembly have passed different versions of Sarkozy's pension reform bill and are expected to finalize and approve the law. Millions of workers were joined by students in recent street demonstrations with more planned. Strikes and blockades at fuel depots and refineries have caused gasoline shortages, while some fringe groups have broken shop windows and overturned cars. But despite the disruption, polls have found that nearly 70% of the French people support the strikers and oppose Sarkozy's pension overhaul. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with David Moberg, senior editor with In These Times magazine, who discusses the militancy of French labor unions and why U.S. workers have for many decades rejected more confrontational tactics to oppose anti-worker policies. He also explains why a growing number of American white workers are disillusioned with the Democratic Party going into the November 2nd midterm congressional election.
One of the things that was striking both back in 1968 and now is the way students and workers often join in together in these protests and strikes that occur. It was more initiated by unions in this particular case, with the rise in pension age being proposed. And students initially took the lead in 1968. And in many cases, and I think both of these instances, there's a combination of the specific grievance and a more general protest against the direction of the government overall. You know, it's quite striking. It's almost rare to find in any public opinion polling where 70% or more of the population agrees with a particular position, particularly when it's a highly controversial one. But polls seem to indicate more than 70% of French people backing the protesters in their current demonstrations.
David, it's interesting that in France, as well as in Greece, in Spain, and other European countries, there is militant resistance underway to the proposed austerity measures of these governments throughout the European continent, and a coalition of workers European-wide that are opposed to this. Here in this country, it seems you've got some activism, but it's on the right, and people here are demanding austerity. Workers have been pretty quiet in this country, and although I know there was a demonstration in Washington, D.C. not that long ago of unions, it wasn't explicitly opposed to austerity, and the articulation of the complaints of workers in this very dire economic time have not been very apparent or clear.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the problems in this country is, among many others in our political culture, is a kind of selfish individualism and a lack of solidarity. Solidarity, you know, it's not just a question of compassion for somebody else who's having a hard time, but realizing, you know, that a large number of people, in this case, most workers, are in the same boat. And one of the things that almost everybody would recognize is the importance of having health insurance. And yet our political culture ends up getting divided between people who have health insurance and people who don't have it. The people who do have it seem to, in many cases, be willing to protect what they have, even though what they have may be vulnerable, rather than shift to some kind of system, you know, that would guarantee health insurance for everyone. And it's, you know, a similar kind of situation that shows up in terms of people wanting to save their jobs and protect their jobs, but being unwilling to take action that would protect jobs of other people. So there's this lack of solidarity, or, you know, put it in other terms, kind of a lack of consciousness of being of the same social class, of having the same kind of problems. That makes for a big difference in terms of how people respond. So, for example, you know, young people in France end up seeing a self-interest as well as a concern for parents or grandparents in this pension issue. The self-interest that they see is that if workers have to work longer periods of time, that it may cut back on the openings of job opportunities for young people. So they see a common interest rather than being pitted against each other. I think that one of the most important distinctions between the kind of political culture in France and in this country.
And David, in your recent article, Wooing the White Working Class, you discuss how many working people that you interviewed in Ohio and certainly all across the country are disaffected with the Democrats. They think they're too cozy with Wall Street. Tell us a little bit about the reasons you heard people were upset with Obama and the Democrats.
Well, I think that the main theme that caught this kind of sense of disillusionment is a sense that not much has been done for what people call the middle class, or what others might call the working class, or working class and middle class. People look at what's going on and they think, well, banks are getting lots of money and they're not being asked to do much of anything for it, and GM's getting lots of money, and everybody seems to be getting a bailout but me. So there's simply not that much that many people see as being delivered to them. You know, they've gone through a decade in which their real income actually shrank for the most part, where unemployment has hit them hard. And disproportionately, unemployment has affected working class men. And this discontent that we see politically with the Democrats is also disproportionately concentrated among men, and white men at that.
That was David Moberg, senior editor with the Chicago-based weekly publication In These Times. Read Moberg's columns online at inthesetimes.com.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life, each one dependent on another, and so the circle, it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows, they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
On the 21st of October, D.C. area animal rights activists deployed to a variety of Huntington Life Sciences targets, protesting the British government's sentencing of six fellow activists, possibly to long prison terms, for opposing Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing laboratory where 500 animals a day are tortured to death testing things like bleach and Splenda. Every corporation in the world knows if you do business with Huntington Life Sciences, like Bayer and Sanofi of Venice do, you have problems with protests like this one, where the lobbying headquarters in D.C. was stormed by protesters. Today, protesters showed up at Huntington Life Sciences funder Goldman Sachs, drawing Capitol Police, who arrived with machine guns and shotguns, but unlike the previous week, took no action.
You can send all the police you want, Goldman Sachs. You can take our security and have all of them stand up.
Oh, man, you should have just dropped your shares. Would have been a whole heck of a lot easier.
This was followed by another protest at Nomura.
Because of your continued involvement in Fortress, you are the number one shareholder in Fortress Investment, which is a lifeline of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day with six animal rights campaigners that are currently on trial in England. These animal rights campaigners were arrested taking actions against Huntington Life Sciences, doing nothing more than we're doing today.
Protesters also stopped by Sinofia, Venice, before moving on to the Embassy of Britain, the nation that is trying to send six people to jail for long periods for nothing more than these protesters were doing on the 21st of October in D.C.
The British Embassy! We are out here because today is the trial of six campaigners against Huntington Life Sciences! They are being sentenced today because they have done nothing more than engage in legal free speech activity to shut down Huntington Life Sciences. This is part of an ongoing series of activist repression the British government has been a part of. The British government has a history of protecting Huntington Life Sciences against the activities of campaigners in their country. Why does the British government continue to silence activists and prop up Huntington Life Sciences? It's because the British government is well aware that once Huntington Life Sciences closes down, this will be a monumental moment for activism across the world, as it will be the first time that a grassroots campaign has shut down a formerly multi-billion dollar industry. But the British government needs to
stop.
You can put our friends in jail.
We will try to find a way.
On the 21st of October, sentencing began in Britain for six activists known as the Shack UK Six for organizing peaceful protests against puppy killing, beagle punching Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal testing laboratory with facilities both in Britain and in New Jersey here in the United States. On the 23rd of October, protesters at a Shack UK solidarity protest at the Georgetown home of Abbott Fund Vice President John Richardson were threatened by police with arrest for tinted windows in a car, for incommoding, and for refusing to provide ID.
Gentlemen, I need your ID.
No, you don't.
No, I don't have
free
to go. At this point, you're being stopped for infraction.
For what?
For what infraction?
Once again, the cops had to stuff their demand for identification where the sun doesn't shine, as animal rights activists never carry identification of protests in D.C., and no law requires carrying ID.
Stopping at this point.
And yet, these bluffing cops whose threats were lies couldn't arrest anybody and had to let everybody go in the end. And it was too late anyway. They closed the barn door after the horse was out. The protests had already taken place. First target, Michael Pace of Goldman Sachs. I would
hope. I'm an abuser.
Quite a crowd gathering at the surface. Guy in a gray shirt is shooting video. The noise is still pretty substantial, even out here.
The home of Michael Pace, Director of Government Relations for Goldman Sachs, because Goldman Sachs investments fund the deaths of 500 animals each and every day of the week. Goldman Sachs continues to own 800,000 shares in Fortress Investments, the life support system of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility who kills 500 animals each and every day of the week, bringing us products that we don't need, like bleach, Splenda, and Viagra. Michael Pace is doing everything he can to get rid of us. His company has called 80 cops on us with AR-15 assault rifles. His company then brought back cops the next week with shotguns and assault rifles. But this is
target John Richardson in Georgetown, of Abbott Fund, owned by Abbott Labs, a Huntington Life Sciences customer.
The UK Shock 6 have been arrested for nothing more than peaceful protest activity.
Like what we're doing today.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Additionally, this protest is in honor of Stephen Murphy, an innocent activist who was wrongly convicted for an environmental action. We will fight!
We know who you are!
That's right, John Richardson. And that's right, Michael Pace. Michael Pace of Goldman Sachs, a company that sicked 75 cops with machine guns on animal rights protesters shortly after the IMF and World Bank protests. We do know where you sleep at night. And Huntington Life Sciences protests are like search warrants. They can be served at any time of the day or night. Better dump Huntington Life Sciences now. Because in D.C. there's no sleep for the wicked. The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society has unveiled a new super ship, the Ocean Adventurer, to replace the Adi Gill, the fast ship that was sunk last year by a Japanese whale poaching security ship, the Shonan Maru No. 2. The Ocean Adventurer will join other Sea Shepherd ships in Operation No Compromise, the upcoming campaign against illegal whale poaching by Japan. She will be used in the same role as the Adi Gill, as a tactical interceptor capable of blocking harpoon shots. Since it is known that the whalers try to ram smaller vessels like the Adi Gill, strategy this year will have to take this into account and keep a fighting reserve of fuel aboard at all times. The Ocean Adventurer looks from the air like a cross between a larger version of the Adi Gill and a destroyer. To the Japanese embassy, all the nightmares poachers in your nation had about the Adi Gill are going to come true this year as a larger, plenty fast Ocean Adventurer takes her place blocking their shots. These criminals will be lucky to kill 250 to 300 whales this year, given that they strained to get half their self-imposed quota of 500 last year, even after sinking the Adi Gill.
The world has grossly underestimated the value of vibrant ecosystems like coral reefs and tropical forests that provide livelihoods for most of the world's poor, concludes a new report from the United Nations titled Global Biodiversity 3. The report, prepared for the annual conference of the Convention on Biodiversity, meeting in late October in Nagoya, Japan, was aimed at reframing the debate over the loss of biodiversity and finding new ways to stem the loss of ecosystems from unchecked development. Across the globe, over 500 million people rely on coral reefs for making a living from fishing and ecotourism, creating a value between $30 billion and $172 billion a year. Warmer and acidic seas as a result of climate change constantly threaten the reefs. The report found that a quarter of all plant species are threatened with extinction, and the population of all vertebrates has been reduced by a third since 1980. According to the Interpress Service, a key question for the conference was how to raise the billions of dollars required to halt the destruction of biodiversity. Currently, $3 billion a year goes to development aid for conservation projects, although the need is 10 to 20 times that amount.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.
After months of conservative activists brandishing racist signs at anti-Obama Tea Party movement rallies around the country, delegates at last summer's NAACP convention unanimously passed a resolution condemning white supremacist elements within the Tea Party and called on the group's leaders to repudiate members who spread a message of bigotry and hate. When Congress passed the health care reform bill in March, Tea Party activists protested on Capitol Hill, with some hurling racist epithets and even spitting at members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Although Mark Williams, president of the Tea Party Express, was expelled from the group for his racially offensive remarks, the movement as a whole took on a defensive posture against charges that some members too often tolerated racism and anti-Semitism. On October 20th, the NAACP released a report titled Tea Party Nationalism that was produced by the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights. The report details more than a dozen examples of hate group leaders who currently head various Tea Party factions. Among individual Tea Party activists profiled are individuals with links to the Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, Christian nationalist militia groups, and the Council of Conservative Citizens, the direct successor of the White Citizens' Councils of the Old South. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Hillary Shelton, the NAACP's Washington Bureau Director and Senior Vice President for Policy and Advocacy. He summarizes the findings of the Tea Party Nationalism report and discusses his concern that the Republican Party has not distanced itself from some of the Tea Party's xenophobic and hate-filled rhetoric.
We believe the vast majority of those who joined the Tea Party joined because they were looking for a political outlet that wasn't being provided to them by either the Democratic or Republican parties. That they believe that in many cases, and we've seen this happen in some elections across the country, that quite frankly, as kind of right-wing as their ideologies are, even the Republican Party wasn't really meeting their issues and concerns. Our research shows us that because of this very loose construct that is the Tea Party, they often talk about themselves as not an organization with a constitution and a structure and a defined membership capacity, but as a movement which anyone can join. And if you pretty much believe in the two basic tenets, you too are Tea Party. And those issues are, if you believe that the government is too big or the taxes are too high, then the Tea Party is the place for you. Well, the problem is, with that loose construct, it also provides a very fertile ground for racists and other extremists to actually bring their agenda in. As a matter of fact, even as we pointed out in the report, even David Duke, of course, a former Grand Dragon of the Klan, a politician in Louisiana, and a member of the Nazi Party, has said very loudly and clearly that he sees the Tea Party as really an organization that's just made for people like him. In essence, because of that construct, it makes it a lot easier for those with more insidious agendas to utilize that loose structure to begin injecting their vile venom of racism and intolerance.
Have any of the people that you've cited in this report been terminated? Have they been fired now that this is nationally documented in terms of their racist and extremist views and organizational connections? Have they walked away or been forced to walk away from the Tea Party movement?
We've not heard of any such thing. Part of the challenge is there's not much of a structure that could actually push them out if they wanted to, and whether or not they're being involved in some of the Tea Party Federation meetings. As you know, one of the places those six constructs meet is at the Federation meetings. We haven't heard of any of the members of any of these extremist groups being kicked out there, nor have we heard of anyone actually tendering a resignation to that end.
I wanted to ask you about the Republican Party and their embrace of the Tea Party and your concerns about the racist elements that exist within this loose coalition of Tea Party groups and what it says about the Republicans. Certainly, they've had a history of what's been called in the past the Southern strategy, playing on white voters' fears and prejudices to get votes at election time. With a lot of the railing against Muslims and Latinos we see in the current campaign, mostly by Republican candidates, it does seem an echo of that old Southern strategy, does it not?
Well, in many ways, it does remind us of that. In some ways, it's really unfortunate that we're seeing almost no consideration for those racist elements that we've actually uncovered within the Tea Party itself. And certainly we understand the Republican Party wanted to make sure they build coalitions that allowed them to be successful in the November 2nd election. And we understand what it's like to be the minority and to actually seek power in a situation like this. But it does raise concerns that there's no discussion about these outside elements. The fear is that since you have this element that's also proven to be a segregationist, racist, and sometimes violent element, and if the experiences we saw in August prior to the vote on the health care bill, and even prior to that when members of Congress went back to talk about that health care bill and had their meetings disrupted, if it's anything like what we saw happening to people like John Lewis, Emmanuel Cleaver, Barney Frank, when they went across the street as a Tea Party rally occurred on the west steps of the Capitol, as some of those involved in that rally went over to the east side and began calling them names and spat on Emmanuel Cleaver, if that's any indication of what we're to expect from this wing, or our friend David Scott, another member of the Congressional Black Caucus in Georgia, whose office was painted on the side with a huge swastika, and other members of Congress who are from the more progressive caucuses within, whose offices had rocks and bricks thrown through the doors and windows. If that's any indication of what we're to expect from this element of the Tea Party to be being actively involved in the Republican Party, we have a real problem on our hands, and we have to do everything we can to address it right away.
To my knowledge, the Republican Party has not publicly denounced the racist and xenophobic elements within the Tea Party, or have they? How has the Republican Party responded, in your view, to what you and others have pointed out, to the troubling connections with Tea Party activists?
We haven't seen a response from the former Republican Party one way or another on that particular element. As a matter of fact, the last we heard from the Republican Party was Michael Steele saying that he welcomed the Tea Party into the Republican Party and said that there were no disagreements between the two entities and that he looked forward to working with them to bring victory to the Republican Party in the November election.
That was Hillary Shelton, the NAACP's Washington Bureau Director and Senior Vice President for Policy and Advocacy. Download a copy of the Tea Party Nationalism Report at teapartynationalism.com or call the NAACP at area code 202-463-2940.